It's 10:06. Yesterday, the NCAA hammer fell on the Penn State football program. The penalties were, as some would say, unprecedented. The $60 million fine, suspension of bowl game participation for 4 years, reductions in football scholarships for 4 years, and cancellation of football wins from 1998 to 2011. All that happened as a result of the Sandusky scandal. How will this change things at Penn State? What about the culture of college sports generally? Well, those are a couple of topics we'll talk about this hour, but we're first going to talk about what's happening in Pennsylvania and what people are thinking about Penn State out there, where Penn State lives and where the bulk of its fan base is. And we'll start with that, and then we'll branch out into the broader questions of college sports generally. Joining me for this portion of the hour is Mike Kern, sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. Mike Kern, good morning, and welcome to the Kathleen Dunn program.
How you guys doing?
Well, pretty good so far. Nobody dropped a bomb on our football program. What's the mood in Pennsylvania after the announcement of the sanctions by the NCAA yesterday?
Well, the mood is about what you would expect. It's going to hurt the football program significantly. You know, how significantly remains to be played out. But the sanctions are, short of the death penalty, probably more than any school has ever received. And technically Penn State didn't break any rules. They obviously broke, when it comes to the chain of command or institutional control or whatever word you want to throw in there. That certainly broke down. It's going to be interesting when all these things come to, if they go through the judicial process, if people are found innocent, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how this is all going to proceed. But, if at some point some of these people are found innocent in a court of law, what that will do to what the NCAA did, I have no idea. But for right now, I think you got to remember, State College is a relatively small insular community in the middle of Pennsylvania that kind of exists on Penn State and Penn State football. So the people there, a lot of them, not all of them, are going to see things differently than maybe the rest of the world sees it. And, a lot of them are Joe Paterno people. A lot of them, you're never going to change their mind. Joe Paterno, whatever you think, was not Attila the Hun, at least I don't think he was. He didn't do enough in this case. He could have done more. He probably, given who he was, if he'd done something a decade ago, probably could have staved a lot of this off. We'll never know. I don't know what would happen if the president would have done something, or the AD would have done something, or somebody that just knew about what was going on, whose name doesn't even come up, would have done something. I don't know. And we'll never know because Joe's no longer around. But it changes everything. I mean, at least for the time being, it changes how Joe Paterno's going to be viewed in history. It changes the notion that Penn State football, does it the right way, even though technically the football program might. I don't know about that. But, when it comes to the culture of college football, I heard you talking before I went on. If people think that the culture of college football in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or Madison, Wisconsin, or I could name probably 50, 60 places. If they think that the culture, that college football is the most important thing going on, well, no, I think that's wrong. Now, will another Sandusky thing ever happen? I doubt it, but that's not to say it could or isn't happening right now at, any one of, any place, because it happens in America. It happens in the world. It happens. So why would we think that colleges or college campuses would be immune? What the sad part about this story is that it was allowed to happen, basically, if you get down to the crux of it, because they chose to protect the football program and what the football program meant over protecting innocent children.
That seems to be the real crux of all of this, is that there was more or less a conscious decision made to protect the program in spite of what happened.
I'm not going to say, look, I've seen the free report or lots of it. I understand. I have my own opinions that Joe was in position to have done something. Okay. And my I think it comes down to several things. Like I said, I don't have all the answers. If Mike McCreary had gone to Joe Paterno in 2001 and said, Coach, I saw Jerry Sandusky in a locker room with your grandson, what would have Joe's reaction have been? I don't think it would have been what it was. Now, from what we can gather, his reaction was to go to his quote-unquote superiors, report the incident, and then assume that it was being handled. And for the next 10 years, walking around and seeing Jerry Sandusky around campus with kids, I find that hard to believe. But I don't know all the facts. I don't know. I know the NCAA has obviously made its decision based on the free report. The Paterno people will always contend that it's not 100% right or accurate or whatever, and they may be right. I don't know, and we'll never know. All we can go is by emails and things that people have uncovered. But, you know, Joe Paterno was Penn State. There's no getting around that. It's pure and simple. And and once again, I ask the question that if Joe had been told at that point in time, to me, it seemed like, and I think it seems obviously to other people, that Penn State put the negative publicity at that time would have maybe done to the program ahead of, and believe me, if you think Penn State's the only school in the world that's ever covered anything up, then I think we're being sadly naive about things. Now, I'm not saying cover something up to of this magnitude as far as child abuse goes, but there are things that happen every day at schools, I would venture, that people say, well, you know, we're not going to go public with that because it could have a harmful effect. Now, in this day and age, it's hard to keep secrets. But it seems incredulous to me that Jerry Sandusky was sitting in a VIP, whatever it was, a box at a football game a week before he was arrested. You know, that to me just, you know, how this person was allowed to stay on campus, you know, at the very least should have been kicked off campus or whatever. I mean, and I'm not saying it's right to say go ahead and do what you're doing in some other county. That doesn't make it right either, obviously. But you got to remember, I mean, these things were, he was investigated in 1998, and for whatever reason, at that point, the prosecutors decided not to go forward with it. So, you know, there's certainly enough blame to go around here. I don't think it boils down to one person. But it's just that Joe Paterno is the only person in all this that had a statue of him. So I think you have to hold him to kind of a higher standard here.
You mentioned that there were other prosecutions ongoing. Who is still facing charges in this case?
Well, I believe if the athletic director and the president, or I'm not sure if I have them right there, but there are two people who are up who are facing perjury charges for apparently not perhaps telling the truth. I don't want to get into all the legalese of this because I'll probably say something wrong, but there are people that are, and I believe it's Spander, and I'm probably going to get the name Curley, who are facing possible charges of, and I believe it would be a perjury.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's, I agree. I think that's what that is. A Penn State student questioned why the student body and especially the athletes should be punished for the wrongs of three men and a monster, as she put it. Is that a legitimate question?
Well, tell me in the history, how do you penalize an institution? Do the people at the players at USC the last 2 years that have not been able to go to a bowl game, were they around when Reggie Bush's parents had a house built for them?
No, they weren't.
Tell me in the history of the NCAA, how do you penalize the people responsible when you usually don't penalize people till after the fact?
Well, that's certainly been a question that's been asked every time this has happened. I mean, going back to the SMU death penalty, I don't know.
Well, obviously you penalize the institution. So you penalize the institution. I'm not saying the people at SMU that had a football season taken away from them in 1987, those players and coaches, were they around when all the boosters were handing out the extra benefits? I doubt it. How else do you penalize people? You're penalizing the institution. So tell me how you penalize the institution so they should just get no penalties then. I don't, you know, you have a choice. You're the NCAA. You're going to penalize. What you're penalizing is the Penn State institution and the culture for letting this happen. If it had been a case of cheating, giving improper benefits, the same thing would have happened. There were kids at Ohio State last year that couldn't go to a bowl game who probably never had a tattoo or whatever was involved in what put them on probation. There were people at Kentucky in basketball back in the early 90s that couldn't go to postseason for a couple years because of things other people had done. So you got to tell me how you would do it differently, because I don't see how you do. You mm-hmm. catch somebody, they have a violation, they do something that you think deserves infractions. By the time that happens, most times the people that were responsible are no longer there. So you got to, you know, I've heard this come out of Penn State. You know, so the Penn State people were acting like this is the first time in the history of the world that innocent kids or innocent people, Bill O'Brien, the players, whomever, you know, are being penalized. That's just the way it is. I'm not saying it's right or wrong or whatever. You just got to tell me another way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go in and say to Penn State, well, there's going to be no penalties because those people are gone, what message does that send? Then you'd never penalize anybody, would you?
Well, absolutely. Let's get a quick call in, because I know you have to leave us in a moment. I'd like to get at least one caller a chance to ask a question here. Victor in Milwaukee, we'll go to you first. Victor, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think the ultimate goal is Penn State is an example to other colleges to not repeat this behavior in the future. I think that's the big message. I agree that the culprits are gone. The students are suffering, which is unfair, but who are we going to blame ultimately? So I'm thinking this is an example, not just to Penn State, to all the other colleges under NAACP, Division I, II, and III, and sports too, just not football. This is what's going to happen to you if you repeat this behavior. So I'm thinking Penn State is just made an example of.
Victor, do you think that people are going to stop cheating tomorrow?
Be honest with you, nope. I'm not, like I said, I'm just going
Victor,
by what why is Penn State being so heavily
well, they're
fined
being so heavily
and punished?
Penalized.
No, I don't think so, to be honest with you. But it's an example.
Victor.
All right, Victor,
listen to me for a second. They're being penalized because a guy just got convicted on 45 counts of child abuse. Okay? This has never happened before. This is uncharted territory. And emotions play into it. Penn State technically didn't violate any rules. They didn't cheat. They didn't whatever. This is totally off the chart here. I don't think this will ever happen again anywhere, even if they didn't penalize Penn State, because it's just one of these things, you know, that happened. It was horrible. It was terrible. It happened to happen to Penn State. It could have happened probably anywhere else where people, you know, are. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say there aren't pedophiles at any other, you know, according to statistics, 50 or one out of every five or one out of every six children are abused. So it goes on in society. But yes, did they set an example of Penn State? Agreed. Do you think that tomorrow, any school that's cheating in football or basketball or baseball or whatever is going to stop and think, well, I better not do that because what happened at Ohio State last year should have deterred people. What happened at USC 2 years ago, 4 years ago? It doesn't. There'll be other schools that'll go on probation for other things. It's the nature of trying to win, and that's the culture that we live in. You want a successful sports program because, you know, would Wisconsin people be happy if their football team went 6-6 every year? Or their basketball team was in the middle of the Big Ten? I don't think so. I'm not saying Wisconsin cheats. I'm just saying is people want to see their schools win, and they'd like to see them do it cleanly. But at that level of college athletics, it's hard not to bend some rules. It's just sort of the way it is.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but I think most people would probably have to agree with you on that, that it is what it is, and it's probably going to take more than a proclamation from an NCAA president to make a difference.
If you put in tomorrow, let's say, for instance, that your football players at Wisconsin were going to get paid $2,000 or whatever, like some people say we should pay athletes, do you think there's not schools out there that would somehow be paying their athletes $3,000 or $4,000? To entice them to come to their universities? Are we naive enough to think that there's not boosters at every Division I program and Division II and probably Division III and whatever that don't? If I asked you right now, is there any kid on Wisconsin in any getting getting something that maybe they shouldn't be getting. Would we be naive enough to sit here and say, yeah, that's true? I mean, I'm not saying Wisconsin does anything. I'm not saying Ohio State. I'm not trying to pick out any school or whatever. But do we think that at Alabama, when Alabama's recruiting against Auburn, let's say, or LSU, that nothing ever happens that by the technicality of rules would be a violation? I find that hard to believe. Maybe I'm just a cynical person that's seen too much of this, but there are scandals in the NCAA that go back to the 50s. Why would I think that in the year 2020 it's going to change? Mm-hmm. Is there any less desire to win in 2020 than 1980? If anything, I think there's more desire to win now because of the money involved and everything it means. And, you know, I mean, that's just – and every person should look – I mean, the thing at Penn State that makes this a little bit harder, I think, for them to digest is they were always a school that put themselves up on a pedestal as being better than other schools. They weren't Ohio State. They weren't Oklahoma. They didn't cheat. They did it the right way. They had Joe Paterno. And now when something like this happens, all of a sudden you're not that person anymore. It's kind of like when Notre Dame gets in trouble. You know, it's like, well, we're Notre Dame. We're not supposed to do that. And I guarantee you, if this had happened at Michigan or Ohio State or Wisconsin or Oklahoma, the people at Penn State and State College would say, see, look at that. Look at what goes on in our schools. That's not Penn State. We're not that way. And that doesn't mean that everything that happens at Penn State was wrong. Joe Paterno did a lot of good things in his life. But it just points out, I guess, that, you know, we're all human. We all have flaws. And in this case, a mistake that he looks like he made is going to override all those other things that happened. And that's sadly going to be the legacy of all this.
I know you have to leave us, and I appreciate you sticking around as long as you have. Just really quickly, how does Penn State move on from this?
I mean, they
took Joe Paterno's statue down, and that was supposed to start the healing process. How do they move on from this?
Well, I mean, you know, it's hard to say because I don't know what state the football program will be in 4 or 5 years. I mean, you know, I think there's always going to be a pro-Paterno part of that. There's always going to be there's always going to be people that will think the penalties were too harsh. There's always going to be people that think they weren't enough. So you got to get beyond that. Now the question is, how do you keep your football program competitive through all these things that are happening? And this, you know, this won't just have ramifications for 4 years. It'll have ramifications beyond that because when your football program, when you're playing football against. When Penn State lines up against Wisconsin 3 years from now and they have 65 scholarship players and Wisconsin's got 85, well, I would say Wisconsin's got a heck of an advantage. And that will, you know, recruits aren't going to want to go to Penn State. Now, some kids will, no doubt. How do you go into a kid's house next year and recruit and say, well, you can't go to a bowl game for 4 years or play for the Big Ten championship? Mm-hmm. That's pretty hard. So even after that period is over, now USC has done it. USC went on probation, no bowls for 2 years, reduction in scholarships, and they're considered a national title contender this year. How do they now? They don't have the depth that they would have normally had, but how do you do it? I don't know how you did it. Kentucky years ago had a big basketball scandal. 3 years later, Rick Pitino had him within one shot, one Christian Laettner shot of making the Final Four. Now basketball is different; it's a five-man, seven-man sport. So. You know, will people stop going to Penn State games on Saturdays if the team is 4-8? Will people stop giving money? I don't have the answers to all that. Okay. I do know that at Penn State, and I would say Wisconsin and Ohio State and Michigan, the 12 football Saturdays a year are probably the 12 days that the people most look forward to.
Right.
And that doesn't. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not why Jerry Sandusky happened. But it was allowed to maybe continue because of the fear of losing that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the reaction I saw at Penn State yesterday was, well, how can they do this to us? Don't they realize what they're taking away? Well, that's the point. The whole point is that, yes, something wrong happened. Now we're taking something away from you so that hopefully it won't happen again.
All right. I know you have to leave. Thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Mike Kern, sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. When we come back, Lynn Zinser, sports reporter for the New York Times, joins us. So if you're on the phone waiting to talk, we're going to continue to talk about this topic. We'll get maybe a more general perspective from outside the state of Pennsylvania from Lynn Zinser in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What we can do is impose sanctions that both reflect the magnitude of these terrible acts and that are also that also ensure that Penn State will rebuild an athletic culture that went horribly awry. Our goal is not to be just punitive, but to make sure the university establishes an athletic culture and daily mindset in which football will never again be placed ahead of educating, nurturing, and protecting young people. More than 100 years ago, the NCAA was created to assure that sports are fully integrated into our colleges and universities, and that the athletic programs wholly embrace the values of higher education. Our Constitution and bylaws make it perfectly clear that the association exists not simply to promote fair play on the field, but to insist that athletic programs provide positive moral models for our students, enhance the integrity of higher education, and promote the values of civility, honesty, and responsibility.
That was NCAA President Mark Emmert yesterday at a news conference in Indianapolis at NCAA headquarters talking about the sanctions being handed out to Penn State in the wake of the Sandusky scandal. We're going to continue this discussion for the rest of the hour, and joining me by phone is Lynn Zinser, who is a sports columnist for the New York Times. Lynn, good morning. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning. My pleasure to be here.
You wrote an article that headline leading off Penn State earned any and all wrath that suggests to me that you were would be strongly in the camp of the NCAA sanctions.
Well, I think that I think a part of my point was like any sanctions that come their way because of this, they certainly earned. This was definitely outside the normal NCAA purview, and certainly calls into question the NCAA's conduct in disciplining X number of other schools, which people have pointed out over the last day, because they've certainly fallen down the job in a lot of other places. But it's hard to argue that Penn State didn't earn anything coming its way. I mean, this was just, you know, the normal scandal, you know, times, you know, 10,000. So I think anybody kind of squawking and saying they went too far is missing the point. And it was definitely a symbolic move that they wanted to make to say that the entire culture needs to be reined in. Now, of course, my column today is whether or not this is even possible, which I have my doubts about also. But,
well, let's talk about that, because we just had Mike Kern with the Philadelphia Daily News on just a moment ago.
Yes, one of my former colleagues. I used to work at the Philadelphia Daily News. So.
All right. Well, Mike is a self-proclaimed cynic, and he's saying, is everybody going to stop cheating tomorrow? And the answer is probably not. There have been a lot of other penalties handed out. SMU got the death penalty. There have been other penalties to other programs, and yet the drive to win and to be number one is so strong, and there are so many financial incentives for it, that how much effect is what happened with the Penn State program going to have going forward, realistically?
Yeah, I mean, I have to join him in the cynical camp on this one. I mean, college sports long, long ago sold its soul for money. I mean, if you look at the way the system is set up and how much coaches are paid and how much is spent on these programs, and this, you know, I love the defense that they make so much money, but, you know, universities are nonprofit educational institutions, so profit actually doesn't, you know, it shouldn't fall anywhere under their motives. But it's been entertaining. It's been, you know, very, very lucrative, and nobody wants to let it go. And it long, long ago kind of just ran away, and pretty much out of control. And the NCAA, you know, is sort of like that little bulldog that tries to get its, you know, teeth in the heel of this runaway train, with very little success. So yes, I'm skeptical. I think that, and I have long been looking at, What might change the system actually is not, you know, the NCAA making this great grandstand, but the lawsuits that are currently pending against the NCAA kind of challenging its basic, the basic structure of college sports. Those are the types of things that could finally change the system, but I don't believe this is going to do it.
Well, Mark Emmert, one of the things that one of the lines in the bite that we played to start this segment, he says, football will never again be placed ahead of educating, nurturing, and protecting young people. Well, the more cynical in the crowd would be wondering how in the world he could deliver that line with a straight face.
Yeah,
because how long has it been since college athletics was in the business of educating, nurturing, and protecting young people?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is amazing he was able to kind of pull that off. But that is one of the NCAA skills over the years. They kind of stand up and look very professorial as they, you know, make their rulings on various things, but, you know, meanwhile, you know, the whole thing is just run amok despite them. You just have to look at college basketball. I mean, the whole culture of now, I mean, college basketball is a one-year stop for people on the way to the NBA, at the highest mm-hmm. level, and everybody just kind of stands around at the Final Four and has a Kentucky whose entire starting five is going to go pro after 1 year and says, oh, this is a fabulous thing. It's like, you're kidding me, you know? It's like, you're supposed to be an educational institution, and these people are just, you know, they barely get their mail there before they're on to the pros. This isn't, you know, this isn't about educating or protecting anybody. It's definitely a money-making operation, and I don't know how anybody pretends anything else anymore.
Well, let's talk about the money a little bit. I mean, it's a $60 million fine, essentially, or I don't even know how to term it, if it's a fine or what it is. But Penn State officials said things could have gone worse for them. And I guess they're trying to look at the bright side of this, but I'm trying to figure out how something would be worse than their program losing $60 million. But that's not money they have to actually write a check to anybody for, is it? That's money that they're going to lose from, for example, they won't get a share of the Big Ten Bowl money and things like that, isn't it? Or do they actually have to come up with $60 million and pay it out?
Well, I think, I'm not speaking on a terrible amount of authority on this, but I believe they are still going to have to pay that money. But what they haven't lost is the revenue stream of all the TV dollars. So it's sort of like, you know, that money's coming in and they're turning around and giving some of it back.
Okay.
I mean, it could have been worse because they could, you know, had they shut down the program and, you know, cut off the stream of television dollars and all the other revenue that, presumably Penn State fans, at least, you know, this season, I don't know how their attendance is going to fare over the long haul, but I imagine people are going to be kind of defiant and still go to the games for a year to kind of prove, you know, they still have this whole We Are Penn State thing going. They want to show that they're not, you know, what mm-hmm. they've been portrayed to be in this whole scandal. So they're still going to have a lot of money coming in. So yes, it could have been worse because if they shut down the program, I mean, they shut off all that money coming in, then they've really done it because, I mean, on top of all this, I mean, Penn State is obviously paying a lot of money out to these victims also.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Milwaukee first, and we'll hear from John this morning. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
I had a question, but I also had a comment. I was wondering what Coach Paterno's attitude would have been if this is one of his grandchildren that was involved in this victimization. But also, I was wondering what happens with the $60 million fine?
Toward an endowment, toward a charity to protect children. That is all very nebulous. I don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Okay.
It's supposed to actually go directly into some sort of charitable endeavor aimed at children.
So this doesn't go into the NCAA's bank account?
No.
Okay. It's interesting. And this would probably be a legal question. I know that this came up on a discussion board someplace, and that is if the NCAA isn't collecting the fine, how do they levy it, and what's their legal standing? And maybe that's a question for a different program. But it's not like it was their money. How is it that they get to decide that?
Well, I think the thing is that because all of this, it doesn't actually have to have any sort of legal standing because the NCAA is a voluntary organization. It's the reason why Penn State isn't going to fight this. I mean, one of the little details about all of this, and people kind of got up in arms, is like, oh, they overstepped their bounds, there's no due process. Well, because of, yeah, that's all true, but because this, the NCAA is a voluntary organization, Penn State agreed to this. So I don't think they have to, you know, do all the crossing the T's and dotting the I's that you would in a normal circumstance just because of the kind of, you know, quasi, you know, the volunteer is probably overstating the case. I mean, if you want to play intercollegiate sports, you kind of have to belong. But they do kind of agree to be a part of all this, and they did agree to the sanctions. So in this, you know, in this case, you know, what the NCAA says, Penn State says okay, and off they go. So I don't know that you have to have all of the, you know, legal niceties that you would in a normal situation.
I asked Mike Kern this earlier, and I'd like to get your view on it as well. How does Penn State move on from this? How do they move forward? If they called you this afternoon and said, Lynn, give us some advice, how should we move forward from this? After you negotiated your fee for that, what would you tell them?
Personally, I would probably, there's still the possibility that they would suspend their own football program for a little while. Them asking me for advice is kind of hilarious because I share nothing in common with the view of college sports of any of them. But just don't see how, you know, profits and the promise of future profits can be used as an excuse for anything at a university like Penn State, but they're obviously going to be loath to give up the possibility of all that money in a full football stadium. So I don't know that they're going to shut it down, but I mean, they really just need, I think, to look at, like I said, the entire culture. And I tell this story. I actually looked at going to college at Penn State. This was quite a while ago. It was right after they had won the national championship in 1983, and I took a college visit down there to look at their journalism school, and all my tour guide talked about was the football team. And I was like, I was going to be, you know, I was interested in going into sports journalism, but I'm like, I'm here to go to school. I don't care about your football team. But they wouldn't stop talking about it. So I think even back in 1983, the priorities were just so far gone. I'm like, I don't care about the football team. So I just don't know that they're going to be able to make that kind of adjustment. It will be fascinating to see how they deal with it because they're basically going to be forced to be at a very big competitive disadvantage, and people aren't going to be able to just pound their chests and say, we're better. They're just going to have to come up with some other reason to want to love football. And it'll be fascinating to see what happens.
Well, they have 108,000 seats in the stadium in Happy Valley, and as you suggested, they may fill them this year. Although last year they had a lot of empty seats at some games, but you kind of wonder if they're only winning three or four games a year, how long the support is going to be there, and maybe it will, but I guess that's what we'll see going forward. Let's see. Why don't we take a call here, and we'll go to Paul in La Crosse. Paul, good morning.
Last January, an assistant AD for Wisconsin acted inappropriately at Pasadena, and it only a month before he was out the door. I believe that's the time frame. And at the time, you know, everyone's going, man, that was fast, the investigation and everything. And they said it was because Barry Alvarez was very aware of what was going on at Penn State. I mean, Joe Powell was still alive then. But he was aware of what was going on, and he said, that's not going to happen at Wisconsin. I'm wondering, are you seeing any sign in college sports that athletic directors, coaches, do have a new idea about what they can, you know, turn a blind eye to, and that's not the way we do business anymore. From now on, you know, it's going to be a lot tighter around here. Is that changing?
That's a great question.
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, and I don't know that you can make any sweeping judgments about this thing, and I don't know Barry Alvarez personally. He may be the kind of guy who always cared about that stuff and didn't want somebody, you know, acting, you know, poorly and inappropriately on his staff. So I can't say that I don't, you know, with any authority that has changed. I mean, every coach is different, and everybody has different amounts of control. I mean, the idea, you know, that Joe Paterno wasn't paying attention, didn't know about this stuff, didn't fly with most people who know anything about Joe Paterno, because he was in total control of his football program and knew everything that went on. So the idea that he sort of, you know, was fuzzy on all of this was not a very believable defense, and has since been thoroughly discredited by the Free report. But it would be interesting to know, you know, how football coaches are going to look at this and deal with this. I suspect a lot of them are just going to think, well, that was so far beyond the pale. That's never going to happen on my staff. I don't know that it's going to change anything. Or else they, you know, they may just be a little more vigilant about every little rumor and report that comes their way.
Okay, Paul, thanks for the call. Plenty of room for others to get in on the discussion. 800-486-8655. Do you think that the penalties levied against Penn State were warranted by what happened? Do you think the NCAA overstepped its boundaries? Or do you think they didn't go far enough? Should they have administered the death penalty and just suspended the Penn State football program for a year, maybe 2 years, maybe more? Whatever way you think about this, 800-486-8655. Do you think this decision is going to have an impact on the rest of college sports generally? And will it result in a change in the culture or not? 800-486-8655. Email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And you can also find the Kathleen Dunn Program on Facebook and leave a comment or question there. We'll be happy to share it with the listening audience. I'm talking with Lynn Zinser, a sports reporter for the New York Times, about what happened yesterday with the NCAA levying severe penalties, not the death penalty, but severe penalties nonetheless, on the Penn State football program. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. This hour we're talking about what happened at Penn State and the NCAA penalties levied yesterday by President Mark Emmert. He announced them and held a press conference, had a number of remarks, things to say. Of course, this has been widely discussed in the blogosphere and on Twitter and on Facebook and on sports talk radio all over the country, and we're talking about it here on Wisconsin Public Radio as well. I'm wondering what you think this morning. My guest is Lynn Zinser, a sports reporter for the New York Times, and who wrote an article about this titled Leading Off, Penn State Earned Any and All Wrath. And we've been talking about whether or not this was going to really change the culture at the top divisions of sports, Division I and the NCAA. That's where all the money is. Nobody's making a lot of money at Division III schools, that much is certain, but there is a lot of revenue produced, and that tends to produce a culture which wants to guarantee that that revenue stream stays intact, and that may lead to some bad behavior of various kinds, not just what we saw at Penn State. But just wondering what you, the listener, thinks about this. If you get a busy signal when you call 800-486-8655, be sure to send an email if you can, talk@WPR.org, because we want to hear what it is you have to say. Of course, as to be expected, some of the people on the Penn State campus, some students have said, hey, why are you penalizing us? Why are you penalizing the players when they didn't do anything? You know, the innocent are being penalized, and here it was four or five people who were responsible for this, and yet we're the ones who are paying. But and I'll put that question to you. You know, how else could this have been done?
Well, unfortunately, that is a system we have to deal with. It happens in every single NCAA infractions case. The people who pay are the students, players, you know, people who are there now. Even in which case, you know, a lot of cases the coaches have been replaced and the new coach is the one that has to deal with it. They do not have a system in place that tends to punish the coaches retroactively. Now, in this case, obviously a lot of this is water under the bridge. Joe Paterno has passed away. Jerry Sandusky is going to spend the rest of his life in jail. And the other officials are also up, you know, with leading legal proceedings, which are far more important than the NCAA sanctions. But the point is that just because these people have gone, you the institution has still profited from the actions that happened, and so the institution suffers penalties. And so what happens is that those players and such that are there end up paying the price. I mean, one of the other problems of the system is that under normal circumstances, transfer rules are so punitive and so restrictive that players who had nothing to do with this signed on after it all happened, you know, are stuck there. I mean, the NCAA has allowed Penn State players to transfer with no restrictions, which was only the fair thing to do in this case. It does not usually happen that way, and players are kind of stuck. I don't believe the system is fair in that way. It's very much stacked against the players being able to make their own choices, whereas schools can cancel their scholarships on a yearly basis, but the players don't have any real choice in what happens to them. So there are some definite flaws in the system, but I think that there's always going to be the case of the institution is going to pay, even if all of the people who, you know, were responsible for the infractions are gone.
Let's take another call. Mike in Milwaukee, you'll be next. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, John.
Good
thanks,
morning.
Thanks for taking my call. I think that the NCAA overstepped its boundaries. I'm just going to focus on one thing. The NCAA has historically vacated wins that involve ineligible athletes, either academically or receiving improper benefits. But vacating wins that did not involve ineligible athletes without any logical connection to the Sandusky scandal with dictatorial prerogative, sets a sub-rational precedent for responding to future violations. You know, Dr. Emmert vacated these wins because he could vacate the wins without any explanation beyond that. Now, these wins, I mean, these are 111 wins. They were garnered fair and square. The Sandusky scandal gave Penn State no competitive advantage in winning those games, nor did Mr. Emmert claim it did. So those wins should not have been violated, should not have been vacated. And that's what I wanted to call in about. Thank you.
Lynn?
Well, the first argument I make about that is that this obsession with wins is part of the problem to begin with. And the other thing is that they blew away all of their precedents, and this was totally, against every grain that they'd ever done before. But they did argue, and I don't necessarily disagree with them, that this is so beyond the pale new that, something totally out of the ordinary was called for. But the other thing about there not being a competitive disadvantage, I sort of disagree because the reason this was all covered up, the reason Jerry Sandusky was not reported was because they didn't want to damage the good name, I put that in air quotes, of Penn State, so that they could continue to recruit and be thought of as this better than everyone else university, which they certainly sold themselves as for many, many years. We do things the right way. Well, had this come out, Joe Paterno believed that that would sour everything that he had worked for. So he decided that it was more important to keep that cherished image, keep his recruits coming in, keep his money coming in. Everybody think of him as, St. Joe Pa, than it was to protect these children that Jerry Sandusky abused. So that was the competitive advantage. He was trying to protect his program by covering this up. So I believe that is the rationale for taking away the victories. But again, you know, if what you're worried about the day after this happens, is Joe Paterno's victory total, I would argue that you've totally missed the point.
Mike, thanks for the call. Let's go to Frank in Star Lake next. Frank, good morning.
Good morning to you. And Lynn, I think you're doing a great job. Yeah, I've worked on college athletics reform for probably 9 years now. Open letters to the president, two of them. And really, all of our politicians of all stripes are part of this problem and share part of the blame here. The Congress refuses to look at the FERPA, the Family Education and Privacy Rights, that it's an act that the NCAA and all the universities use to be secret so that you can't get at the records of the students who are really not students. And that's it's the great hypocrisy. And the NCAA is sort of like the fox who sent out their to chide one of his kits that he's well trained to eat the chickens in the chicken coop. So there is so much behind this. It takes more than this program, I believe. Joe Nocera wrote another one of his columns on the NCAA. It's such a hypocritical mess, all driven by money, and it's the American sports culture that's impacted what higher education ought to be. And, Lynn, if you comment on what I just said, that would be great. Thank you.
No, I agree with you. Joe Nocera has made this just a personal mission over the last, 8 or 9 months or so. And God bless him. You know, it's he just kind of keeps exposing everything that is totally wrong with the system and hasn't let up. So I'm a big fan of Joe Nocera. It's a system that benefits too many people, and people don't want it changed. They like their games. They like their college football. On Saturday afternoons, they can put on their colors and cheer and feel good about it all, without, kind of having to deal with all of the ramifications. I believe that there are a few lawsuits in the works that, namely one spearheaded by Ed O'Bannon, the former UCLA basketball player, that challenges a system that basically gives these universities rights to players' likenesses and images and everything that they stood for while they were school, like forever, which is really hard to imagine is legal. And so there are some legal challenges going through the system, and I believe if it ever comes a point where some court rules that these players are actually employees of the university as opposed to students, which, they really are, in effect, that's where the system starts to fall apart, because I don't think they can justify much of this system as if with the players being employees versus student athletes. Well, I love that phrase.
Can we ask about the fans of Penn State or of Tiger Woods or Brett Favre or whoever? Why do we put these figures up on a pedestal? I mean, I'm sure that the football pitch you got in 1983 from your Penn State tour guide actually worked on some people. Why do we need this?
That's a really, really good question. I mean, sports are they're so appealing because as a part of entertainment. I mean, they're obviously entertainment, but it's like, they were like the first reality TV. You never know what's going to happen. It's an unscripted show, and people have just fallen head over heels for it. I'm totally guilty in that regard. I'm a sports reporter. I still love sports. There's a lot of problems I have with the system and how they're run, and the importance that are placed on them. But the hero worship instinct is beyond my pay grade. I don't know why it's so important to people to have these people put up on pedestals and think of them as greater than they could possibly be. I mean, the whole idea of the Joe Paterno statue that was up while he was alive, and the idea of having a statue of someone who's still the coach is kind of crazy if you think about it. It's just not right. And he's a football coach. So it's kind of this crazy human instinct we have to just have this idol worship. And I suppose you need somebody with a psychology degree to try to get to the bottom of that, and not someone with a newspaper journalism degree.
Well,
not my natural instinct when I took that visit and got the football sales pitch, and I was being trained to be a journalist. I'm supposed to be skeptical. I'm one of the society's skeptics, so it didn't work on me. But yeah, it does work on a lot of people.
Well, we all like to have something to cheer for, or something we can feel like we belong to with others who are also cheering for it. And even if we aren't playing, it's fun to support your team, and there's sports lovers all over the world, and then there are also, soccer hooligans and this and that and the other thing. We see these excesses because we love this stuff so much, and perhaps we need to have a psychiatrist on to maybe explain that, and then maybe we'd know why all those people drank the Kool-Aid when Reverend Jim told them to. The broader question, and we only have about a minute left, your thinking on this. The president of the NCAA says this is just a step. We're working on reforming the system and making a clearer rule book and doing a bunch of things to make sure that we really do have student athletes. Give me, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most likely and 1 being the least likely, is that likely to be successful?
Well, they may reform, but the entire system is, I believe, now on kind of unsupportable ground. I don't know that they can reform enough to make this system actually work in any sort of ethical, moral way. So they're going to clean up around the edges as much as they can and try to make it look good and hopefully be able to get this stuff through the courts as it comes up. But I mean, real reform in the system? No, I don't okay. believe that can happen anymore.
All right, and we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, Lynn Zisser, for being with us this morning. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Lynn Zisser is a sports reporter for the New York Times. Earlier we heard from Mike Kern, a sports writer for the Philadelphia Daily News. Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers produced this program and handled on-air production as well. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn.